From the late 15th century to the mid-19th century, an estimated 10 to 12 million Africans were forcibly shipped to the Americas to be bought and sold as slaves. An event that was so influential, we still feel the effects almost 500 years later. Hello, and welcome to The Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want. And today, I want to talk about the Atlantic slave trade. In writing this episode, I found that I needed to think a little bit harder about how to structure it. Because unlike Nixon or Clinton, where I was only covering a few years of time, the Atlantic slave trade spanned from the end of the 1400s to the mid-1800s, which is about 250 to 300 years. So, in order to organize it in a way that I think will be the clearest, I'm going to break it down into four chunks. The beginning, what it looked like in different parts of the world, the end, and finally, the lasting effect it had on our world's socio-political order. But I'm also going to be splitting this up into two episodes. This week I'm going to cover the beginning and what it looked like around the world, and next week I will finish by talking about the end and the lasting effect it had on the world's socio-political order. Part 1. The beginning. So, like I've already mentioned a couple times, the slave trade began in the late 15th century. But let's go back a little before this. Naturally, the slave trade was not the first instance of contact between Africa and Europe. By this point in history, they were regular correspondents. In fact, prior to the slave trade, we have centuries of recorded communication. Remember that we're talking about Africa pre-colonization. It was, and still is, a widely diverse continent, with people living in everything from kingdoms to city-states to small villages, and although it varied depending on location, it was overall economically successful and self-sustaining. It's only when West African kingdoms and individuals begin to rely on European trading that we start to see substantial conflict. At the same time, European countries were in an arms race to see who could be the biggest, the fastest, leading them to, quote, discover the Americas. Spain, Britain, France, and Portugal, to name a few, were starting to set up their early colonies in what would become known as the United States, Brazil, and the Caribbean. And this so-called New World was providing these settlers with new opportunities. The American soil was perfect for growing tobacco, sugarcane, and cotton primarily. But the one hiccup was these crops were labor-intensive, and they didn't have enough settlers or indentured servants to work and cultivate the new land. Prior to the Atlantic slave trade, slavery as a concept and practice had unshockingly already existed. It took on many forms and evolved over time, usually taking inspiration from old models, but changing key aspects. The Atlantic slave trade wasn't even Europe's first rodeo. In 1204, Italian merchants imported thousands of Armenian, Circassian, and Georgian slaves to Italy. However, it wasn't to the same scale, and it wasn't as dehumanizing. At least in Europe. At the time, slavery usually followed one of three models. You could be an indentured servant, which allowed for the possibility of buying your freedom. Some people were more like serfs, meaning that you were bound to a plot of land and the will of the landlord. And in some cases, slaves were considered part of their master's family, giving them the opportunity to own land and rise to power. But even Europe had to take inspiration from somewhere, and one of the earlier models comes from ancient Greece. Greek slaves were called barbarians, which related to their inability to speak Greek, and therefore, inability to speak back to their masters. Aristotle said, "It is clear that there are certain people who are free and certain people who are slaves by nature." This idea was insane, but it was also pretty widely accepted. Rome then, as usual, copied the Greeks, and their population was estimated to be at least 30% slaves, which is actually similar to the percentage of slaves in America at its height. Romans also actually invented the plantation, using mass numbers of slaves to work the lands. Judeo-Christian cultures also partake in slavery, using religion as the excuse. If you're wondering why I'm giving you a brief history of slavery, it's because understanding what slavery looked like before the Atlantic slave trade provokes a deeper understanding of the horrifying act that the Atlantic slave trade really was. In a way, the Atlantic slave trade combined all the worst aspects of these past models, and we'll get more into what that actually looked like later. But for now, understand that the Atlantic slave trade has two core values. Number one, slavery was a result of human wrongdoing. And number two, it was a hereditary status transferable through birth. But now let's look at a brief history of the enslavement of Africans specifically. Muslim Arabs were the first recorded group to import a large number of Africans to their territory as slaves. They specifically enslaved Bantu-speaking populations, and in this case, the reason behind it was because of the color of their skin. This would be considered one of the earliest examples of modern-day racism. Geographically, the Spanish and Portuguese are the closest to the Muslim Arab world, and it's believed that their proximity likely led to early absorption of racist attitudes towards black people. And since the Spanish and Portuguese were the first colonizers in the Americas and the dominant importers of slaves, they would go on to hold a strong power in defining the characteristics of Atlantic slavery. But back to before I ranted about the history of slavery. Like I said, European colonies were beginning to settle, but they didn't have enough people to work the land and produce cotton, tobacco, sugarcane, etc. So they turned to slavery to fulfill their various labor demands. However, they didn't initially think of Africa. Crossing the Atlantic Ocean wasn't exactly efficient. Initially, they tried to enslave the local First Nations groups. However, this didn't exactly go as planned. A tale as old as time, the diseases brought from Europe to the Americas were killing First Nations by the thousands, and a lot of them were fighting back. And so, even that wasn't enough. It's now when they turn to Africa. But I want to debunk some common misconceptions. We seem to have this collective belief or notion that the Europeans somehow laid siege to Africa, running in guns blazing, chaining up and shipping Africans off to the Americas. And until I did research for this episode, I was completely guilty of this. But this myth upholds a Eurocentric and slightly white supremacist view of history, one that reduces West African nations to a pawn in European domination. And in truth, this narrative is blatantly false. African kingdoms were heavily populated and very powerful. The idea that the Europeans had even the option of colonizing West Africa at the time is false. But in most cases, these were fully fledged empires we're talking about. So instead, white sea captains came to Africa offering guns, rum, and metals in exchange for slaves. And initially, this seemed like a great deal to the African kings and merchants, and they were very willing to make the trades. The European guns allowed them to expand, and the rum and other goods were economically beneficial. They also could get rid of their incarcerated population, because the human beings that they were trading for these goods were criminals. And this was because it meant that everyone from the merchants to the sea captains could protect their consciences and see the slaves not as fellow human beings, but as criminals. If you remember what I said were the two key ideals of the Atlantic slave trade, and that the first one I offered was the idea that slavery was a result of human wrongdoing, this is an early example of that notion in motion. And it would only grow, as the demand for slaves, and by extension, the justification for those slaves, grew. And this idea that the slaves were somehow lesser is what would go on to construct the ideals of racism. But we're going to get into that later. For a short time, the African kingdoms, along with the European slave traders, prospered. So, now I would like to revisit the narrative that European people forcibly captured Africans to take to the Americas and use as slaves. In the context of what I just explained, we now understand that in reality, it looked more like Africans capturing fellow Africans. I think that one of the key things to understand about the Atlantic slave trade is that nobody is blameless. It was truly a global failure, which is important to recognize in order to do justice to its victims. However, if we are going to recognize that, it is equally important to recognize that this does not mean that the blame should be equally distributed. Because at the end of the day, the Atlantic slave trade ripped African economies apart, and the short-term economic boost is nothing compared to all the other devastating effects, the likes of which we still feel today. So we have to recognize that no matter who is involved, West Africans did not end up benefiting from the slave trade in the long term, whereas the Europeans definitely did and still do. So the blame is nowhere near equal. And I will devote more time to this in next week's episode when I discuss the effect of the Atlantic slave trade on the world's socio-political order. The enslaved people were seen as commodities. The model of the Atlantic slave trade provided them with no rights and no ability to buy their freedom. When the individuals were traded, they would be shaved to prevent lice and be branded to show proof of purchase, the same way you would a cow. Sometimes, the branding meant cutting off their ears. This form of slavery, in which the slaves were deemed movable property, was labeled chattel slavery by historians. Like I mentioned earlier, the largest proprietors of the trades on the West African coast were Spanish and Portuguese ship owners. But this is not to say that other Europeans like the British weren't involved. Most of Europe was, at least in some way. The pathway of these European ships gained the nickname the Triangular Trade. This referred to the three stages of the Atlantic trade. Stage 1 began in Europe, where the manufactured goods to be traded were loaded onto ships and bound for ports on the African coast. Stage 2 was when the trades were made and the newly purchased individuals would board ships and cross the Atlantic to the Americas. And finally, Stage 3, this was when the plantation goods such as tobacco and cotton would be shipped back to Europe. However, the model of the triangular trade was implemented in 1518. Prior to that, most European countries required that the ships carrying enslaved people return to Europe first. In 1518, though, King Charles of Spain authorized Spain to ship enslaved people directly to America, setting this system into motion and causing the demand for slaves and the number of slaves in America to skyrocket. The conditions on the ships that would carry the traded people over to the Americas were notoriously horrific. At their largest, they were housing around 400 people, and this meant that each slave had an average of 4 square feet of space. In 1791, an eyewitness testified to an American proceeding, they had not so much space as a man in his coffin. But the lack of space was the least of their worries. There was never a regard for sanitation, so this meant that there would be epidemics of disease on board these ships, and the sailors would either let them die or throw them overboard. And if they weren't worrying about disease, they were worrying about dying of malnutrition. And sometimes, these men would throw themselves overboard because the conditions were so bad that death was preferable to life. On the occasion that they were bringing women and children, which was much less common but did happen, they would be forced above deck, where the crew abused and raped them however they pleased. And the men would be forced to dance for the crew, for entertainment, and in order to curb rebellion. Overall, the slave ships were so bad that about 20% were estimated to die before ever reaching land. But the arrival to the Americas did not come with any peace. They would once again be bought and sold, rebranded for their new, quote, master. Where the slaves were coming from and where they were being brought to changed naturally over time. But overall, it's estimated that 48% went to the Caribbean, 41% went to Brazil, and only about 5% of the total slave population went to the US. So I now feel like I have sufficiently covered the beginning of the Atlantic slave trade and its construction. We're going to get into part 2 and talk about what the slave trade looked like in different locations around the world. I'm going to look at 3 main locations: West Africa, what is now called Canada/the United States, and what is now called Brazil/the Caribbean. In West Africa, what started as a way for African kings to grow their empires and a way for individuals to grow their wealth, a system that initially appeared just as beneficial for the European traders as the African merchants, would not remain this way. Like I've already mentioned a couple times, at first, African merchants and kingdoms prospered, but it didn't take long for the demand for slaves on the side of the Europeans to become too much for the merchants to easily meet. Individual kingdoms only had so many incarcerated people, and they burned through what they did have pretty fast. So being sold into slavery became the new version of incarceration. It became the only response to illegal acts, just replacing all other forms of criminal sentences. Obviously, Africa is a continent, so to understand the devastating effects the trading came to have on the economies, we just gotta remember that they are individual economies within this big continent. Obviously, the same borders we have drawn between African countries now were not really in place then, so it's difficult for me to refer to the kingdoms, city-states, etc. individually, because it wasn't that defined. And you know, I'm not pretending to be an expert on African history, but I am trying my best. Anyway, I'm trying to say that these European merchants weren't working exclusively with one overarching Africa. No, it was individual kingdoms all across West Africa. So this competition for trade with the Europeans begins to provoke violence and hostility between the individual economies. So imagine the ability of these city-states to meet the European slave demand is getting worse and worse. Yeah, they can replace all other criminal sentences with slavery, but they still can't really just be pulling their citizens off the street for trading. No, the key ideals of the Atlantic slave trade, even in West Africa, is that these slaves are somehow worse. They are lesser. They are sinners. So when they can't meet the demand with their own population, these kingdoms start to look towards neighboring kingdoms, and we start to see these epidemics of conflict and wars, all with the intention of capturing soldiers to trade, because if they're prisoners of war, they can be seen as lesser, and the inhumanity of the Atlantic slave trade can be justified. The never-ending demand for new slaves was becoming a catalyst for war. But here's the kicker. In order to defend themselves from neighboring kingdoms, they needed firearms, which they needed to trade with the Europeans for. So in order to protect themselves, they needed to trade human beings for firearms. But in order to get those human beings, they needed to go to war. But in order to go to war, they needed firearms. So it becomes this endless circle of conflict. And so we reach this tipping point, where the economic benefits of the trade are no longer worth what goes into being able to make the trade. And these West African economies are not benefiting from this. It's causing this slow-burning economic crash that will leave them absolutely devastated when the Atlantic slave trade is outlawed. But we'll get into that next week. And in addition to all of this, the main demographic of the population that was being traded and shipped away was young men, or men in good health. And over time, this became devastating, as the population became made up of only the elderly and women, which made reproducing, and by extension, the reintegration of men, very difficult. Some of the men who had been captured and prepped for slavery had never seen a white person before, and because of their pattern of taking black men away and then returning for more, a myth developed that they were cannibals. So many men would kill themselves before they even had the chance to be sold. And this might seem trivial in comparison to all the other effects of the slave trade, but the fear of being sold to white people, both on the sides of men who were most likely to be bought, as well as the sides of the women who were constantly fearing for the lives of their brothers, husbands, and sons, and the fear of constant conflicts between neighboring kingdoms created an incredibly fearful and unhappy atmosphere. But meanwhile, across the Atlantic, if you were a slave taken to Brazil, your average life expectancy in the late 1700s was 23. Being a slave in Brazil or the Caribbean was likely the worst place to be a slave. The conditions were so horrible that the only time a slave wouldn't be working would be if they were dead. Here, the majority of slaves worked on plantations, the most difficult kind of slave labor. They worked 10 months out of the year from dawn until dusk, planting, harvesting, processing. One of the worst parts of this was the fertilizing that had to be done. This required slaves to carry 80-pound baskets on their heads up and down hilly terrain. And you can guess what was in those baskets. If you were working on a sugar plantation, which many did, when it was time to harvest, you had to work 48 hours without sleep in sweltering sugar presses. This is because speed is incredibly important when harvesting sugar. Once cut, it can go sour within a day. Harvesting required the sugar cane to be crushed in a hand roller and then boiled. It was common for people to get their hands caught in the roller, and so their, quote, owners would keep hatchets on hand to amputate if someone got their hand stuck. Brazil was, by far, the worst place to be a slave. And even though it got better in Barbados, and even better still in North America, they were still never by any means good. But the horrific conditions in Brazil and the Caribbean explain why the largest number of people were imported there. It was because the death rates were so high that the slave populations were unable to sustain themselves. So the, quote, owners needed a constant flow of new slaves. This, however, was not the case in American/Canadian colonies. Conditions were just barely good enough for the enslaved people to reproduce. This meant that the people who owned slaves didn't need to constantly be purchasing more. And like I said earlier, the second main ideal of the Atlantic slave trade was that slavery was a hereditary status, meaning that children of enslaved people automatically become slaves themselves at birth. So, slave owners learned that if they kept the conditions just barely good enough, then their slaves would have children, which they would very often then steal and sell. But in their mind, they weren't stealing because they owned the children. When the slaves arrived in America, they would be rebranded after being purchased in America, and that branding was usually on the cheek, the exact same way we would with cows. The largest number of slaves in North America was concentrated in the American South, working on primarily tobacco and cotton plantations. However, in American and Canadian colonies, it was also common for slaves to work in the household as handmaids or doing skilled crafts work, and occasionally, some even worked as sailors. But this also meant that it was more common for enslaved women and girls to be sexually abused by the people who enslaved them. So although the conditions were slightly better in North America, they were still absolutely horrific. Like I said at the beginning, this is the first episode on the Atlantic slave trade, and I will be finishing the story next week, talking about how it ended and the lasting effect it had on the world socio-political order. I will go into how even after it was made illegal, it continued to go on underground for many years, and how it is one of the biggest contributors to the construction of race, and why white people today still benefit from that. All my sources will be linked as usual, but I'm going to wait to give my recommendations until the end of next week's episode. But thank you so much for listening, and I hope you will finish the journey with me next week.